Hey gang, are you out there looking to make business cards and not quite sure where to go? Maybe you've tried some online sources before and ended up with some crappy, flimsy cards? Well, let me tell you about the one that I use and I love. It's Vistaprint.com. Vistaprint allows you to make up to 500 full-color, single-sided, or double-sided business cards starting at $9.99. Simply go to Vistaprint.com, order your cards, and in the offer code, enter BC500. That is B as in boy, C500. That's Vistaprint.com. Go there, get some cards, start passing them out. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. Cody Braun from the great band Reckless Kelly is here today. They've just released their 11th album, Sunset Motel, last Friday. I suggest you pick it up. It's absolutely fantastic. Cody and I got to go to a listening party for this with my friend AJ Vallejo invited me. And, we did a cooking show with Willie, his brother. And I've met Cody before. I met all the guys, but I never really got to hang out with them that much. But I went to their listening party, had a great time hanging out there, and I ran into Cody. We started talking about how great the packaging of Sunset Motel is. I wish I could describe it to you very well, but you got to see it for yourself to believe it. So I think buying this album, either on vinyl or the actual CD, is totally worth it because the packaging itself is great and entertaining on its own. So check this out. So I ran into Cody at the party. We started talking. I was like, man, you got to come on the show. He's like, yeah, sure. So we booked it for the next day. So he came in the next day. We were both a little hungover. And Cody and I sat down and had a great conversation about making Sunset Motel, this band that has been together for 20 years, working with his own brother, started off playing with their dad in Idaho when they were just kids, then started Reckless Kelly, moved to Austin, and 20 years later, here they are. They've toured relentlessly for the last 20 years. They've got millions of plays on Spotify. They came along during the second wave of Americana, that 90s one. You know which one I'm talking about? Yeah, and you can see them this weekend if you're in Texas. If you're in Fredericksburg, Texas, they're playing at a place called Luckenbach, Texas, in Fredericksburg, Texas, Saturday, October 1st. Next weekend, they will be October 7th at the Granada in Lawrence, Kansas, on October 8th, Saturday, October 8th, at the Hat in Manhattan, Kansas. Go to recklesskelly.com to find out if they're coming to a town near you. They're actually going out on tour from October 21st to November 5th of the East Coast and Midwest. So get out to recklesskelly.com, find out if they're coming to a town near you, and enjoy my conversation with the great Cody Braun. He's a fantastic dude, and we get into it. He tells me all the ins and outs of the band, what's been going on for the last 20 years, how they got to this place that they're at now, which is here. How did they get here? All right. Enjoy my conversation with Cody Braun coming up in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me real fast. If you live in Houston, tonight, September 30th, Friday, September 30th, Skyrocket will be playing at the Continental Club. There was a mistake. There was a thing going around saying that the show was sold out, but it is not yet sold out. So there are still tickets available. Come on out with your friends. Have a good time. Skyrocket tears it up at the Continental Club every time. I hope that you guys are all doing well. I hope that the fatigue of all this political shit for the week, not just the week, just the last year. It is a fatigue. I'm getting tired of these people. I'm not even that into them to start off with. So I'm kind of tired. I can imagine you are too. Looking for music, looking to have conversations about things that bring us together, not tear us apart. You know, that's not fun. That's not good. So we got to find stuff to bring us together. That's what I think. On a personal front, I wanted to let you guys know, I've been seeing Zuri. She was living here for a while, and we broke up a little while back, and she's moved out, and that's sad. I miss Zuri. I just thought I should let you know, because there used to be like, oh, me and Zuri did this, me and Zuri did that, and there's just been not really any mention of that for a while. Love Zuri. We're still friends. We're still very close, very tight, staying in touch, and it's a sad time, but I'm getting through it. I'm actually going out to Houston a day early to spend the evening with my grandma and my aunt, and spend the day with my grandma tomorrow doing stuff that she likes to do. And then, of course, playing at the Continental Club with Skyrocket tomorrow night. Then I'm going to go to ACL Festival this weekend with my friend AJ. AJ Vallejo invited me to go to ACL Festival. He invites me to some pretty cool things sometimes, including the listening party for Reckless Kelly's new album, their 11th album, Sunset Motel. And that's where I got to talk to Cody Braun about doing the show. And the next day he came over, we sat down, had a great conversation, and you're about to hear it. The great Cody Braun from the amazing band Reckless Kelly, 20 years in the making, and now they're there. Go to recklesskelly.com, pick up a physical album. I promise you it is worth it. Go to the record store, or as Cody said, if you pick it up from recklesskelly.com and pick it up from them directly, the money goes directly to them with no middleman. Eliminate the middleman. Give it directly to Reckless Kelly if you can. But if you want to support some music stores, some record stores too, get out there and do that. All right? Hey, listen, I want you to have a great weekend. Whatever it is you're doing, maybe I'll see you at ACL. Maybe I'll see you at the Continental Club Friday night in Houston. Whatever you're doing, have a great weekend. I'm thinking about you. Enjoy my conversation with Cody Braun from Reckless Kelly. Let's get down. When the Lord Algae guys, and because I know when I was in Gowdy, we had one of those guys. We had Jack Joseph Puig mix our album.
Yeah.
And there's guys, Jim Scott mixes a lot of stuff.
Yeah. There's guys that just do that. I mean, they started out as producers and then moved to just, you know, mixing, you know, and they still do both. But what's pretty remarkable these days, too, that we found out is, a lot of those high-dollar guys, you know, your T-Bone Burnett's and those type of guys, are really willing to do take on projects for cheap because they're not getting those $100,000 record deals anymore, you know. Yeah. And so, and then they get, maybe they'll get a couple of those a year, but then they've got a ton of time to go take on a band like us, who's nobody's ever heard of, you know, so to speak, in
the
bigger world, and really put a stamp on it and take it to the next level. So that, you know, you can get those guys to come in and do. You know, I mean,
they're within your reach now.
Jim Scott was like, we never would have thought he would have time or that we'd be able to afford it. And yeah, they're within reach now. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
How do you guys? I mean, you're.
I'll scooch up.
I'm noticing that you're some weird noise going on here.
This is just in my head.
I thought it was too. You're really self-sufficient. Like last night, like you're a band that you would think there would be some handlers involved. But last night when I was like, oh, you should come and do the show, you just handed me your card. And then I just texted you and did a thing. But you do have management, you have a booking agent and stuff. And I'm sure you have a publicist working this record.
We do, yeah. The first time in a few years, or first time in a couple records that we've had a publicist.
How did you do it? Because people know who you are. And all the outlets are waiting for a new album from you, right? I mean, like a No Depression.
Yeah, I mean, we have our hardcore fan base of people that, thank God, buy the records every time we put one out. And we know what that number is. And about 6 years ago, we got out of a management deal and decided to just manage ourselves for a while. We're just like, you know, we're paying all these guys a big chunk of the pie, you know, to manage us, you know, answer the phone and try and make stuff happen. And they're not making stuff happen. They're just kind of answering the phone. And, you know, we just felt like we were giving this big percentage of our income away to these guys who are doing stuff that we could do on our own. And we were like, unless somebody's really bringing something to the table and, you know, making that percentage that you're paying them worthwhile, then it's really not worth the money. And it was the same with publicists. Like, we were paying publicity companies, you know, $3,000 a month with a 3 to 4 month minimum, you know, where you're basically locked in for 10 grand for a publicity company. And we would give them the record and they would send it out to their list of people and get very minimal response because of the, mostly because of the way the business is now. It's just their, those outlets, those traditional outlets that the publicity companies are used to using are not doing record reviews anymore. You know, everything's online and there's very few of those little things that are happening and so much more competition that, you know, the publicity teams were, you know, we're forking out 10 grand and they'd come back and be like, well, we got you a review in the Austin Chronicle and two shows on KLBJ. And it's like, fuck you, you know, yeah. Like we can do that. Yeah. You know, and save 10 grand, you know? Yeah. So we basically kind of just shit canned management, started our own record label and quit using the publicity companies for our last two records, the Long Night Moon and the one before that. And we saw about a 20% decrease in sales, partly due to the way the industry is right now. People are buying less records. Right, they're, you know, getting everything on Spotify for free. Yeah. And so there's part of that. But then, you know, partly because we weren't getting the little publicity stuff here and there. But when you look at spending $10,000 on a publicity company and giving a record company, you know, 70% or 80% of everything you sell are of your records, you know, as a loan, you know, you're basically taking a loan out. Once we put all of that money back in our pocket, 20% decrease was still a win. Like we were like,
yeah, totally.
I knew the record labels were stealing from us, but I had no idea how much. Like our first check for our first from the distribution company was like $80,000. You know, covered the record cost like that. The first
unbelievable.
Check, you know, and it was like, we already have, like, we've been around 20 years, so we have that fan base built up. So we know we're going to sell that with or without a record label or a publicity company. So if we know we can pay for the records, which are now worth very little, you know, people, the percentage of people that are buying records now is very small. It's just, we kind of just went to the, like, put all the money in your pocket, you know, do all the stuff you can do and be okay with that. You know, and it was considerably more, you know, and on this record, we signed up with a new distribution company, 30 Tigers, and they've been great. We decided to do a publicity team because it was time to do another push. You know, it's been 3-4 years, 5 years since we've done anything major. So I think intermittently to do that, I think it's okay. And it makes sense to kind of keep your name in there and try and get some more stuff. But on a yearly basis, I really, and even now, you know, it's still, I'm not going to know until the end of this run or, you know, till this record runs its course, whether it was worth it or not, you know, what comes out of it, we'll see. But I prefer to do everything, you know, or at least have control over the majority of it. Cause it's just, you don't have to go through 10 people to make a decision. You can get stuff done immediately. And yeah, it's less stuff that you get done, but at least you know it's getting done.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, you do really cool things. I've had a copy of Bulletproof on vinyl for a while, which is a great record. But this album packaging, this is a weird thing to talk about, but when you do something so great, I mean, this is so unique and It's hard to describe. I've seen a few people over the last couple of years, like doing this show, coming in with something that you're like, wow, you spent some time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You put some thought into this. Whose idea was this? How did you come up with it?
My brother Willie kind of had the original idea to do the red and white. Like, you remember when you get like a Cracker Jack prize, they would have the little thing with like you hold the red colored lens up to the blue stuff and it or cancels out. So kind of hidden things. And the Dodd sisters, Backstage Design, did our last record, which won a Grammy for Best Design. And the record previous to that was nominated for a Grammy. But we, I mean, even before we met the Dodds, like we always tried to do packaging that was cool.
Yeah.
You know, Wicked Twisted Road came with a board game. You know, it's like,
oh, really?
It folded out into a board game and we had created this goofy little, you know, and most people turned it into a drinking game, which is fine. But we've really tried to make things interesting and make the packaging something that people want to have in their hand. And it's such a dying art. I mean, nowadays, you know, people are just art. Like, Willie and I were talking the other day, yesterday, day before, about just that, like, how far is it going to go to where people, you know, if you can't make any money on your records, which most people are kind of getting to that reality where you're not going to make your money back even, you know, I mean, if it becomes like making a music video and it's purely promotion, then people are going to stop spending the money to make good records. They're going to stop making records altogether. It's going to be single based, and they're going to use technology to make it as cheaply and as quickly as possible. And it's going to become even more dumbed down than it is now. And it's a really sad state to think about the new generation of people making music, doing it to where it's like, well, if it doesn't have any value, then I can't afford to go spend the money to make it really great. And yeah, that's sad. That's really sad. So I think our perspective on it is to still make records, full album length records, and put out a package that is cool, something that's fun, you know, interactive, yeah, something that people can enjoy as a piece of art, the whole thing, you know, which is what it used to be and what it's supposed to be for us. And I think it's important. I don't think it's not financially smart, and you know, we're going to take
pay
a hit
off,
on
though
it
in some way.
It does, and it's definitely gratifying.
You know what
to,
I mean?
You know, I mean, it's just knowing that there's not a lot of people doing it, and no, all the suits are going, no, don't do that. Don't, you know, why are you spending your money? It's like, we're doing it because it's what we want to do. That's what we've always done, and it's why we do things the way we do them, because we just like having control. We're control freaks, but
yeah,
we also believe in the art, and
it's
what we grew up in. You know, it's, you and I both grew up in an era where, you know, I mean, you used to go save your money to go buy a record, and you would listen to that record until it was worn out, you know, and even if it wasn't a great record, you still listen to it enough times, like, I'm going to get my $15 worth.
Yeah.
And kids today, they download singles, and they rarely will download a whole record and sit and listen to the whole record. It's really weird. It's just a different generation and different way of listening to music. But I think,
how do you listen to music personally?
Mostly vinyl.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really not into new. There's not a lot of new stuff out there that turns my head. You know, I mean, there's usually a couple bands a year that I'm like, oh wow, that's cool, and I'll, you know, spend some time and listen to it. But I'll usually download the CD that they have, unless they have a cool vinyl package, which I'll buy. And I don't mind buying. I always try and buy music. I don't listen to Spotify. I don't listen to Pandora.
You have millions of plays on Spotify. Like, some songs have almost 3 million plays.
Yeah, we'd have gold records hanging on our walls if it was 20 years ago and those were radio spins. Yeah. You know, we'd all be living in fucking big fancy houses and driving new cars, but we're not. And you don't get any credit for it. Like, people look at it like, meh. Yeah, it's like, it doesn't equate to anything, because they've devalued music to the point of where it's not worth a fucking cent.
You know? What's interesting is that this band is 20 years old right now, and it started at like the peak of great things happening in the music business, and people selling millions of records. Even if it was the boy bands, they were selling a million records a week.
Yeah, country now, music was at the height of...
Height.
Yeah.
Shania Twain and all
Garth
that kind
Brooks
of stuff.
And,
Garth Brooks, yeah. You've watched it change as a band, and you've had to adapt, and you've done it.
Yeah, every year. I mean, it's literally been change the plan every year. Because it's changing that fast, and it's changed that much. I mean, just listening to or seeing it all happen, it's been pretty remarkable. Willie and I were both just talking the other day about how remarkable it is to live in this age, and sad in a sense, you know, to really just watch the industry implode on itself, you know. And with the internet, you know, when we first started making records, there was no internet. You know,
okay, yeah, that's what I was going to... I didn't know if you guys got a website, like when you had your first record out.
I don't even
out,
know if we
yet.
Had... I don't think we had a website until like the second or third record or third... Even then, I don't even remember having our first website, honestly. Because I was the last one in the band to get a cell phone. Like, I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't have a laptop. Somebody gave me an old like desktop computer that I never plugged in. Like, the road manager was pissed because he'd always have to come and slide my info under the door in a manila envelope, you know, print it out. And I'm old school. You know, we've always been kind of old school that way. And I get that probably has a lot to do with why we do things the way we do them. But I think it's, I still think it's important.
But to me, it pays off.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's, if we all just succumb to that and just give in and just say, okay, well, this is the way it is. That's what everybody's doing. Then,
right.
Then who's going to keep that alive? Who's going to keep that, you know, I mean, who's going to teach the new generation? Like, hey, this is this really cool thing we used to do where you would have a concept and make a record from front to finish and the songs all kind of make sense and have some sort of, you know, this record doesn't, it's not really a concept record, but we've done a lot of them that are concepts from start to finish. And some of my favorite records are that way. And
sure.
I don't know. I think that's a really big part of playing music and being an artist and expressing yourself and being able to kind of tell a bigger story than just a song. And it's just one song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's bigger than that.
Yeah. How, you guys are about to go on tour. How do you, you guys in a bus together?
Yeah, we bought a bus a few years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
We're still paying it off, but, I mean,
is it a cool bus?
Yeah, it's a, I think a 2004 Prevo, you know, 12 bunks and a front lounge and back lounge, and it's our home away from home, you know. I mean, we toured for 15 years in vans and trailers and Suburbans. I think we had 3 Suburbans and 4 vans, and then Willie and I toured for 9 years with our parents and our brothers before
When did
that.
You start doing that? What's the...
Oh, we were kids, 7, 8 years old.
No shit? Your dad was is Muzzy Braun.
Yeah.
It was Muzzy Braun and the boys. Does he still play?
Yeah, he still plays probably 50 shows a year, a little more, something like that.
Wow. You guys were born into this.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean...
And all of you do it, right? It's just the 4 of you guys, right?
Yeah, my two younger brothers. You know, okay. There's no other brothers.
There's not like an accountant. So
yeah, I wish.
Just hanging out in Idaho.
None of us were smart enough to go to school or to really do anything else. But, I mean, my grandfather was a musician. He raised a family of 6 playing music. My uncles are both musicians. My cousins all play music. We just really grew up around it. And, I mean, my dad had a band and bought a little motorhome. And we lived up in the mountains in Idaho and lived with no electricity and no TVs, no phones, no running water in the wintertime. Like, had outhouses and then would go on the road during the summer and he would play. And, you know, when we were infants, you know, we'd go on the road. And then once we were old enough to kind of start singing and playing, you know, we'd get instruments for Christmas. And before too long, by the time I was 7 or 8, you know, I was playing in the band, you know, a couple songs a night. And Willie would get up and sing. And then by the time Mickey and Gary were 6 or 7, they were playing instruments. And eventually my dad, you know, fired his band and we were the band. And did that for 9 years. We put out 5 records. And my dad was one of the first guys in Idaho to kind of, back in the day in the 70s, was one of the first guys to start making his own records. You know, they got a 4-track and figured out how to do it. And, you know, when everybody thought you had to have a record label to make a record, he was one of the first guys in that area to just go, no, we're going to make a record and put it out. And I want to, you know, he had truck stops and different little places that would sell his stuff. And
you guys are like, you were raised like punk rock with that ethos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like punk rock, but more hippie cowboy.
Yeah, hippie cowboy. That's awesome.
So yeah, we grew up around, I mean, just very hands-on, do-it-yourself. My dad was always, I mean, he booked all the shows, you know, drove the motorhome, and, you know, we rarely had a road. My mom was pretty much the road manager, and, you know, bought his own PA. We learned how to set up the PA, we learned how to run the PA, learned how to book the gigs, how to distribute your records, and then I just had to, you know, show up on time, put on a show, do, you know, issue a contract, you know, do what you're supposed to do. And so learning that at, you know, as a child, you know, really, when Willie and I, when we started this band, he was 18 and I was 19. We moved out of the house. I was 17. He was 16. And we started going to Oregon and rehearsing with these guys. And so, yeah, I mean, it's pretty, but we had a real head start.
Yeah.
At 18 years old, it wasn't like we were just finding out about music or learning how to play. We had 9 years and 4 or 5 records under our belt. You
yeah,
know, of doing it.
Records.
That's a different level, you know, smaller. And, but still, as far as like a do-it-yourself, like, you know, yeah. we already knew how to do that. My dad, you know, was very adamant about, you know, just teaching us that you can make a living doing it. You know, maybe you're not going to be a superstar or make a ton of money, but if you want to play music and make a living doing it, you can do it. You know, yeah. you find ways to make it work.
There's those realistic people in your life, like, you know, Mark Holman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom had a lot of music friends, and I met him at a pivotal time when I was like 13, and he, you know.
Mark's great.
Yeah, but he was, you know, there was a guy that, like, he wasn't on MTV at that time, but he was touring with Dan Fogelberg, producing Carole King records,
yeah.
playing in his own band, writing songs for wrestlers, like whatever you can do, it's a hustle, you can do it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you grow up seeing it as like a job, not as much of a dream. You know what I mean?
It is. Like it's a different perspective.
Yeah, there is a different perspective.
Or as a hobby, or as a something to piss off your parents, or yeah. you know, whatever yeah. it may be, the reasons why you get into it. But yeah, it was always very much a job for us and something we enjoyed. I mean, I knew when I graduated from high school, I was like, I know I want to play music. I don't want to teach music. I don't want to, you know, move. I didn't even really want to go to college to learn, you know, because like most of the classes I looked at were, you know, basically going to teach you how to teach music or be a professor right, or, right. you know, and there's so much you can learn. And I wish now that I would have spent some time and gone, you know, and studied some stuff. But at the same time, if I felt that bad about it, I could still take those classes sure. and I don't.
Yeah, yeah. How many shows do you guys play a year now?
We try to do right around 150.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of our comfort zone. This year with a new record, we'll probably do a few more than that.
Mm-hmm.
We cut it back a few years ago, kind of when we did the big starting our own label and doing all that stuff. We kind of just, we're at 15 years, I guess, as a band. And, you know, you just kind of reevaluate stuff every year and look at what's working and what's not. And we were at a point where it was just like, let's cut all of these extra things that are just sucking us dry, you know, and let's focus on what we're good at. Let's focus on what's working instead of these pie in the sky type, oh, if we do this, we could do that. Maybe this will happen. Maybe that. Like, cut yeah. out all the maybes, you know, just like, let's just focus on what's actual numbers, actual working.
Yeah.
And let's do that. And we did that. And it really, really helped. And part of that process was eliminating the shows that drive you crazy. You know, the tin hall, shithole, honky tonks in little markets around the country where you're basically playing for nothing or playing for, you know, enough to pay for your trip there and back. It's like, that's, you're not accomplishing anything. No. At the point where we were at, it was like, we don't need the gig as a rehearsal, and
right.
we're not gaining fans in this market. This is a, you know, people standing in the front of the stage smoking cigarettes, yelling for George Strait covers, you know, like
right.
this is not getting us anywhere. So right. cut those gigs out, just quit playing the Wednesdays and Thursdays in little shithole markets for no money. And then, you know, it opens up a lot more time to go do other stuff that you want to do, or, just spend time at home with your family or whatever. And it, when you allow yourself that time, it really kind of makes you look forward to playing the gigs you do have. Or when you do go out on the road, you work a little harder and you're excited to be there instead
you're
of just
fresher.
The grind yeah. of just, okay, we have to play 5 shows a week or 4 shows a week
right.
to pay the bills.
Right.
And it took us a long time to get there. You know, I mean, it's just, we worked really hard to get to that point and build those markets where now we can, you know, we go out and work hard when we have a record out or we're touring this for the summer, but when we're off or at home during the winter months, you know, we can play 2 nights a week or 1 night a week and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're still going to be able to pay bills.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we're not getting famous or raking in the dough. If we wanted to go work 200 shows a year, we could, and we could be putting more money in our pocket, but it's going to drain us, you know, and everybody's going to be pissed off and grumpy and not have any fun. And
right.
That sucks.
That does suck. Because you didn't choose this to have a shitty job.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever tour opening for bigger acts?
We have, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, once in a while. It's hard finding acts these days that
right. Because so you guys are playing like theaters at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing well enough to where it makes more sense. Unless it's a, you know, I mean, if somebody that was selling out, you know, 5,000-6,000 seat rooms or 10,000 seat rooms asked us to go, we would go in a heartbeat. You know, but even then, those gigs pay $500.
Yeah.
You know, so do it for the exposure and you can do X amount of them, but you still have to pay rent at the end of the month. So we don't do as many. I mean, we haven't turned down many, but really, you look at how many bands are out there touring and really doing those bigger rooms anyway. It's not in our genre. You know what I mean? You have Jason Isbell, Chris Stapleton, Sturgill Simpson, and, you know, a handful of others. But I mean, even there, you know, they're still only doing 5,000 to 10,000 seat rooms and not in every market, you know? So, I mean, they don't have the money to spend, you know, they can't pay us what we would make across the street doing our own gig.
Right.
And, we, like I said, we would totally be up for doing some of those shows, but there's about 2,000 or more bands out there vying for those opening slots. And it's all who you know. And I don't know, it's been interesting trying to kind of change our conversation. Cause we got here right when the Texas music thing started, the Texas red dirt country thing started.
Right.
And we fell into that crowd and have a ton of friends in it. And it's been great, you know, great for us. We were, you know, able to make a lot of money in Texas and make some great contacts and play some great places, kind of on those coattails, you know, of the Texas music thing. Cause it kind of blew up.
Yeah.
And now it's, I think at its peak and, you know, now we're just a different band as well. You know, we're not the college rock band that we were 15 years ago.
No.
We want to try and do more theaters, and we were very capable of doing that and putting on a show. And it's funny, we did a show in Boise, Idaho, 2 years ago, and it's this beautiful theater called the Morrison Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's on campus, and it's a sit down. You know, you have a cocktail in the lobby, but you can't bring drinks into the theater. And it's not a standing type show.
Right.
And so our, you know, a lot of our fans and friends were chapped. You know, they're like, well, you know, we want to come see you guys. We want to dance and rock out and drink and get drunk and yada, yada. And we can't do that at the Morrison Center. And we're like, well, just give it a shot, you know? And so people were kind of pissed going into the show. And then after the show, we had, like, our Facebook just blew up with people that were just like, man, we've never sat and listened to you guys before. Like, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, that generation gets older and it's like, man, if you sit and listen, you might find something new that you didn't hear before.
Right.
Or, you know.
There's also some stuff, like, even on the last couple of albums before Sunset Motel, that is very ethereal and played more delicately, that when I heard them at first, I was like, man, that's because my memory of you is of the early 2000s, and, like, that was some rowdy-ass rock and roll. Because you guys are, I mean, you're an Americana band, but you're a rock and roll band.
Yeah, definitely more rock and roll than country.
Yeah, I mean, you're a rock and roll band. But I was wondering how that would translate, and then the theater has made a lot of sense. I was like, because you guys are growing up.
Well, we're getting older, and our fans are getting older.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want, a lot of those people that have been following us for 20 years have kids and jobs, and they don't want to come to a college rock bar at 11 o'clock at night on a Thursday.
No, you know, they don't.
They'll pay $50 for a ticket where they can go sit at 8 o'clock and be home by 11.
Yeah.
So trying to convince the promoters and the people, you know, that hire us, like, we have a crowd there. And the reason we didn't do well in this market last time is because we played at a college bar at 11 o'clock at night and our fans didn't come out.
Yeah. Because
they're not into that anymore. So it's tough because you want to stay relevant. You want to stay new and fresh and always be gaining new fans, which is younger people. But yeah, I mean, our fans are aging with us and you have to, what we've been trying to do is we'll hit a market twice a year. And the first time we go in, we'll do the theater. And then the second time we'll try and do the rock and roll show somewhere.
You know, that's
where you kind of feed both.
Both
bases.
Sure. You guys are going out on tour for almost a month, the East Coast and Midwest. All places you guys play, you guys tour the States whenever you put out a record, and once a year, basically, or twice a year, like pretty much
hit. Try to do everything twice a year, yeah. Okay. I mean, no, we don't get everywhere, but yeah.
Where do you play in New York? I didn't write it down, sorry.
This time we're doing the City Winery.
Oh yeah, it's a popular place.
It's kind of a new, you know, hip spot. They have places in Atlanta,
Nashville,
Chicago. Yeah. They had one in Napa Valley. I think it just closed, but great rooms set up for listening. You know, I mean, it's seated tables. People have dinner and they watch a show, and it's exactly the kind of place we're looking to try and play. And our fans really love it. The Atlanta show is already sold out. The Nashville show is getting close to be sold out. We've got a couple of them that are on that tour that are already sold out. So it's kind of fun to know you're going into a tour with good numbers already out there.
Yeah. That sounds like that place, kind of the Birchmere. Is it like that?
Very much. Yeah.
That place is cool. That seems like a great place for you guys to play.
We've done that a bunch of times. We did that the first time with Robert Earl Keen. He took us out on the road. It was a funny story. When we first moved here, going back to my dad, he recorded one of Robert's songs on his record in the early 80s, mid-80s, and was running his own record label and doing everything. So he sent Robert a royalty check for like $60 or something, you know. And Robert, at the time, was just kind of getting started, and that was the first royalty check he ever got, was from my dad. And so he remembered that. And when we moved to Texas in 96, we went and saw him at the Shiner Boktoberfest that they used to have out in Shiner.
Yeah.
And he was signing autographs after the show and went up and introduced ourselves. And he was like, told him who we were. And he was like, "Oh, you're Muzzy's kids." He goes, "If you need any help, just let me know. I'll help you out." And so we called him a couple weeks later, and he like pretty much took us under his wing and took us out on the road and managed us for a little while. And it's just unreal, you know, because at that time he was number one. I mean, yeah. Still is in my book, always number one in the Texas scene. But to have, and he's also a very self-sufficient dude. Like, he does everything. He manages, him and his wife manage his career. And he's very no bullshit. You know, it's business. And if he's getting screwed around, it's, you know, he fires people and moves on to the next one, because he just doesn't take any shit. And he taught us a lot, you know, but in a very realistic way. It's not, you know, not assholish or it's just like, man, this is my business. I'm going to take care of it. And if it's not getting done right, then you're out, you know. And we learned so much from him, and we're lucky enough to, you know, he took us from the West Coast to the East Coast and kind of all over. And I really owe him a lot for having us out there and helping us in those early years. Cause it's so hard. I mean, I really don't, I was talking to my brother Gary at lunch today, just like, I don't know how, like if I was starting a band right now,
I wouldn't even
know where to start, like, or how to try and make it, like get five guys in a van and living together. And yeah, I mean, it's obviously still possible, but it's just a different world. And the way kids go about it these days is so different too. I mean,
it's very different.
It's not the old go out and just play, you know, and then hopefully somebody will discover you. It's like you can kind of create your own world, you know, and start off here instead of here, you know, at a very mid-level starting place instead of at the basement, you know, because of the technology and the access to people with the internet. And I mean, we used to have to get people to sign up for a mailing list and mail schedule. Remember mailing your schedule to people?
I remember.
Every month?
I remember it cost some money, too.
Yeah.
You know? And if you got a gig after you mailed out that thing, you couldn't advertise it.
Yeah. There was no way to let people know. I mean,
flyers.
Yeah, posters and word of mouth. And
yeah, it's a very different world. But you guys, I feel like you guys have really adapted. And you've got your own thing. You at least had carved out your own place. You know what I mean? Before everything sort of went away.
Yeah, I would say our generation of bands were kind of probably some of the last to do it that old school way of, you know, loading up the van and just hitting the road and beating your head against the wall and sleeping on couches and doing what you got to do. I'm sure there's bands still doing that. You know, but
there are.
There's smarter ways to do it there now. You know, like, and the kids know it. You know, you don't have to work so hard, I don't think, to achieve what we used to have to really work our asses off for.
Right.
But It's almost twice as hard though, because now anybody can do it. You know, I mean, anybody can make a record in their living room and make it sound pretty damn good. And the listening public has no idea the difference between a $100,000 record and a record that was made in somebody's garage.
No, and that's how now you can just contact Jim Scott. You can contact Howie Weinberg. Mastered my last album. Just like you can just do it. It's just like, you know, I've got a couple of days free, I'll do that for, you know, your budget or whatever. It's lucky times.
Weird. It's pretty amazing. I mean, you can really learn a lot. And I was just saying, it's still really fun. Again, what we were talking about earlier about, you know, it doesn't make sense on paper and financially to go and spend 2 weeks in a studio or 3 weeks in a studio in a really nice studio and use great mics and all that stuff.
Sometimes,
but God, it's so much fun. It's so much fun as an artist to go in and create something that sounds good and you work hard for it. And it's just, there's such a gratifying feeling when you go in and you make something and you know it's good, you know, it's you didn't use the technology for evil, you know, like we didn't tune any vocals on this record.
Of course
like,
not.
We didn't tune anything. Barely used Pro Tools.
Live as a band?
Yeah, on most everything.
So there's overdubs, but you played live.
I overdub a lot of my stuff. Because like
mandolins and stuff like that.
Mandolin and fiddle. A lot of times we'll go in with the band and they'll track the song and they'll take, you know, I'm more of a one time, first take, second take is usually when I play my best stuff when it's fresh.
Right.
So when the band goes in, they hit it 2, 3, 4, or 5 times before they get the one they all like. And by then I'm spent. I'm like, God damn it. I just played my best shit on the second take and you guys don't like it. So now I have to try and do that again. And I'm not good at playing the same thing twice. So I prefer to let them get the take they want. And then I'll go in and hit it, you know, once or twice and have it. But
it's cool. After 20 years, you've got your rhythm together, like the rhythm of the band and how you do stuff.
Yeah. The only hard part is like doing it that way is sometimes they don't leave me many holes. If I'm not there to fight for my spot, then I end up with no spot. But
right. I read in the thing that Willie came to the table with like 30 or 40 songs.
He did. And we recorded over 20. I think we recorded 22 songs or something like that. 20. We had to put 13 on the record.
Songs on the record. What are you doing with all those other ones? You're going to save them up for releasing singles?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was really fun. We went back into Arlen Studios where we did our first record, Milliken, when we first moved to Austin. We did our first record there. And so
you did it with a dude that was like Jacob Skiba was probably like 3 years old then. Right?
Yeah, probably. He was even born. No, he's, yeah, Jacob's now, no, he was definitely born, but young. To go back into that studio was really fun. And Lisa Fletcher is just incredible.
Incredible.
And just made us feel so at home. And we would show up in the morning and start working on stuff. And, you know, when you can set everything up and have everything ready to go, you can just walk in and we've done all kinds of scenarios in recording where it's like, go, go, go. You only got a few days to knock it out. We tracked Good Luck and True Love in, I think, 4 days. I think we did almost everything on that record in 4 days. The majority of like all the main tracks. So to go in, we had 10 days booked and I think we ended up extending it to almost 16 or 17 days. We went over and we really were having so much fun just recording. And some friends would show up, like Keith Gaddis called. He was like, hey man, I'm playing Second Pub. And I'm like, well, what are you doing right now? And he's like, well, come over. And so we cut, you know, a track with him playing guitar.
Awesome.
And then Rosie Flores was playing the Continental Club. And I was like, hey Rosie, what are you doing before soundcheck? Come over. And so we cut this song that we do with her quite a bit called It's a Wild Horses, Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
So we cut that, you know, just for fun. And then the Mastersons had just finished recording a record in there. So they were in town and came away. And Eleanor and I played a bunch of violin parts. And then Chris played some guitar, and I was just, we cut way too many songs, but it was just so much fun. And I don't, you know, we'll find a place for that stuff somewhere. But
yeah,
we couldn't help ourselves.
Yeah. I think that's fucking great, man.
Yeah.
Do you guys, are you making any videos or anything for?
We need to. I've got some ideas for videos. We have a good friend in town, Peter Zavadil.
Oh, I love Peter Zavadil.
He's so awesome. He's done so many killer videos, and he helped us when we first kind of started our own thing and didn't have any money. And, you know, he, another industry for him, you know, where people were spending, you know, $60,000 to $100,000 on videos. Now that's, you know, they're not doing that much anymore.
Gone.
So, you know, he helped us make a video for, you know, half of, or very, very cheap for what we had in the budget. And the video is amazing. And again, it comes down to that person that's just great. You know, yeah. I mean, an artist that can see it, shoot it, get it done. Like, we were out shooting these little Texas towns, and Peter's directing, filming, doing five jobs. And, you know, we're all soaking wet, sweating. And we go out in a day and shoot a video. And he goes in and edits it. And it was awesome.
Oh,
you know, it's just
great.
Like, it looks like a $60,000 or $70,000 video that we did in an afternoon, you know, for pennies on the dollar. And
yeah,
you know, it's just, like I said, finding those people that are into making art and having fun and,
yeah,
and creating something that it's not about the money. You know, if you can find those people that really love doing what they do, like the Dodd sisters that do the artwork, you know, they painstakingingly like go through all that little shit. There's perforations, and I mean, they're
raised lettering.
Yeah,
everything,
I mean,
it's unbelievable
on,
yeah,
that stuff. And you know, we could never pay them, you know, what the hours that they spend on it is worth. But they do it because they love it, and it makes a huge difference at the end of the day when you present something as a, you know, final package, and it's a piece of art, you know, something that we'll be proud of for a long time. And,
yeah,
you know, because I don't care if we sell a ton of them or not. You know, the people that get it.
Yeah.
And that's who we make the music for.
It's coming out on vinyl, right? Because I saw a record. Yeah, you had a record yesterday.
Yeah, the vinyl packaging is even more detailed than the
when does
CD.
That come out? Is it?
A couple weeks after the release. Yeah, it's right behind it. It's in production. Just takes a little longer.
Yeah.
Because there's only like a handful of vinyl people out there, companies that are making vinyl.
Yeah.
And now it's the new cool thing. So everybody's like totally backlogged.
Yeah. But you guys have been doing it for a while. You're not like just jumping on some bandwagon. Mm-mm. You believe in it. You know, I saw a shirt that made me really happy. It said, "You can't roll a joint on an MP3.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So true.
It's very true. It's sad. It's sad for people like that and people that make great album packaging. Hey, so I was going to say something. I was in a video, in like a big budget video that Peter did like 5 years ago. I can't remember the dude's name. But it was like a handsome dude with leather pants.
Yeah.
Country guy. Where, obviously, you guys are going to be on tour for a while. People can go find it all at recklesskelly.com and find out your schedule, because it is going to be pretty rigorous for the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Out there kicking it. Any of you guys have kids?
David has a little boy, Owen. But he's the only one with any kiddos.
It was cool seeing the kids at your listening party yesterday.
Yeah, it was funny. It was Bucca's kid, Bucca Allen, his son.
Yeah,
and
Savannah's son.
Savannah's
Charlie.
Son, Charlie, yeah.
Yeah.
I went over to Wayne's house there, stayed with Wayne's. His dog, named his dog Moon Cereal. You can name the dog whatever you want. I want to name it Moon Cereal.
Moon Cereal.
Awesome.
So people can catch you guys out on tour. I can't tell people enough. This album is actually totally gorgeous, and people should buy the actual CD. They can get it if they're in Austin at Waterloo. They're probably going to do a thing at Cactus in Houston.
Yep.
And whatever other record stores there are.
Yeah, you can get them off our website. Go to recklesskelly.com and order it. We ship them out. I personally lick all the envelopes. No, I'm kidding. But if you get it off the website, we make an extra couple bucks. So
yeah,
and you know, instead of going to Amazon or any of those other biggies, like, it looks good on the report when the people buy them from iTunes and whatnot. But you know, if you want to actually support the band, get it from their websites.
That's a good thing to hear. Yeah. To hear, yeah. And people can get tickets to your shows on your websites, or there's just links to
we have the links to all the ticket spots and the tour schedule and all that good stuff.
Thank you for taking the time, because I know this is a busy week for you, and you totally just, like, we just did this while drinking at your party last night.
That's how it works. I do more business in bars than I do in the office.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, thank you. Tell your brother thank you and hello. And did I tell you this thing about Mickey yesterday?
I don't know.
Because I saw Mickey and I've met him a couple times. I've seen him. But there was one time I actually talked to him. But you know how when you meet someone on Halloween?
Which one of you were dressed in drag?
No. Oh, you know what? I was. I had my hair all standing up and I was wearing lipstick. I was kind of like a new wave guy. You know, like a Robert Smith kind of kid with his hair standing straight up. And with Charlie Sexton 80s hair.
Yeah.
And but he was dressed as a cowboy and he was inside of a horse.
Oh, yeah, the horse costume. So, the like, little cowboy.
When he was like, I met you before, and I was like, I know, but I just always picture you as a dude walking around town with a horse. And whenever people would say, like, oh, I'm going to see Mickey in the motor cars, I just think, like, that guy has his own little horse he walks around in. Well, thank you for coming, Cody.
Man, thanks so much for having me. It's really, really fun.
It's great talking to you. All right, Cody Braun from the great band Reckless Kelly, who's just put out their 11th album, Sunset Motel, available now. You can find it on the iTunes, you can find it on Spotify, but I recommend getting this brilliant package. Cody thinks you should get it from them from their website, recklesskelly.com. If you live in the Hill Country, they will be at Luckenbach, Texas, which is a club in Fredericksburg, Texas, tomorrow, October 1st, and next Friday, the Granada in Lawrence, Kansas. Saturday after that, The Hat in Manhattan, Kansas. Don't forget, they will be on tour October 21st through 11th on the East Coast and the Midwest. Get out there. Check them out. Reckless Kelly. Great, great band. Their 20th anniversary. It's their 20th anniversary. That's unbelievable. Pick up Sunset Motel. Pick up the physical copy. Get the vinyl if you can. Get the CD if you can. Great work, guys. All right, when you're out there checking out Reckless Kelly's stuff online, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or in your iPhone app. Your iPhone podcast app, or on Stitcher, where you can stream it. And don't forget, when you're listening to it, if you enjoyed this conversation with Cody Braun, if you enjoyed the conversation with Reckless Kelly, share it. It helps spread the word about the show, okay? Subscribe to the show. If you like a show, share it on Twitter or Facebook. And you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Thank you again to Cody Braun for coming by. Reckless Kelly, their new album, Sunset Motel, out now. They're playing tomorrow night at Fredericksburg, Texas, at a place called Luckenbach, Texas. All right, go to recklesskelly.com, pick up the physical album. Have a great weekend. Let's get down.
But you never told me, and everybody saw it coming, but I didn't believe. And then you built your walls up, now everybody's breaking them down. So who's gonna pick up the pieces after I quit coming around? And who you gonna turn to when the lights go out? When the movie's over, who you gonna think about? The darkness, when there's nobody around, tell me who's gonna be your baby now? Well, it broke my heart in a minute, and it wasn't even yours to break. Somehow I got caught up in it, I never learned from my mistakes. When I knew there were others, there always are with a girl like you. And I was standing in line while you made up your mind, knowing just what I would do. So who you gonna turn to when the lights go out? When the honeymoon's over, who you gonna talk about? In the middle of the darkness, when there's nobody around, tell me who's gonna be your baby? Should have seen me down the stretch. Should have seen me shut them all down. And now I know that winning doesn't always mean winning the race. Cause I was on the bit and all out. But you bet I